Jacob, are you nervous? I'm nervous. Why am I so nervous, Jacob?
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Breakfast Bites, part of the Stadium & Gale Network, and brought to you by our sponsor, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida. They are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you can give our boy Guy a call if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate wills, or trust and estate planning. You can give him a call at 386-752-7240. And we have a special guest tonight, my friend, our former college professor. Also known as Luther Ogle during this time of the week, 1996 All-American and national champion, James Bates. How you doing, James?
I'm your boy, Guy.
Yeah.
I'm your guy, boy. Hey, Jackson. Good, man. I keep running into you everywhere. You're going to end up running for mayor somewhere. Everywhere I go this year, guys, I've run into Jackson and his girl. Hey, there's Jackson and his girl. Hey, mucho gusto. Pleased to meet you. I met Jacob's parents for the first time at the Desire Cup. And yeah, thanks for having me on. This is a fun week, guys.
Yeah, big week. You're a Tennessee native, grew up just outside of Knoxville. Let's start there. Your dad was the defensive coordinator at Florida Spurrier's first year, but he was an alum of Tennessee. How did that all work out, you growing up around the Knoxville area and coming to the Gators?
Well, I lived in Sevierville, Tennessee. I went to same high school that Dolly went to, Sevier County High School, defending state champions and running right through the playoffs right now, the Smoky Bears. Todd Loveday, my former teammates, the head coach, they're doing it up. I moved there my sophomore year, and so I didn't grow up there. My dad was a coach, so we were like army brats. We were always moving. But that's where I ended up, where I graduated high school from. And, you know, Jackson, it's kind of what that we're hoping so hard that this next hire brings that magic back. And, you know, the Spurrier's first year here, my dad was his defensive coordinator. They had coached against each other in the USFL. And even that year, and then there was a year in between where my dad left, and just watching what was going on in Gainesville, it was just magical. You know, it was just so much fun. They called it the fun and gun for a reason, and I just really wanted a part of it. It just seemed like so much fun, and you know, my dream was always to be a part of a big time college football, and it sure felt like a fun place. And you know, Spurrier's hook line back then for the out of staters, because he didn't do a lot of out of state recruiting. It was mostly Floridians back then. But it was, you know, the whole shoot, you got all these people saving up their whole life trying to turn 60 and move down to Florida, and you got a chance to come right now and you're 18. And I'm like, well, sign me up. Now they don't go on spring break to Ohio. And they don't. And you know, and I made the right decision, that's for sure. You know, and gosh, we won a lot of games, met my wife just on campus a few days. Tina was a swimmer there. And I love being a Gator, and I owe so much to being a Florida Gator, that's for sure.
Now, you saw the fun and gun, despite your dad being the defensive coordinator. Did you play any different positions in high school that you wanted to be a part of the fun and gun, or strictly just linebacker and defensive growing up?
No. When I was in junior high, I was living with my dad in Arlington, Texas. And about that same time, the Boz was up in Norman doing his thing. And I just couldn't get enough of the Boz. And my dad, I was a decent pitcher in growing up. And so I had a decent arm. And he would have these quarterback coaches, that friends of his, that he'd like, oh, you need to come and you need to work with this guy. They wanted me to be a quarterback, but all I wanted to do was be like the Boz. That's all I wanted. And I had to wear 44. It's kind of embarrassing how much I really had to wear 44. They used to send us these, the media guides when they were recruiting us. And as soon as I get a media guide from any squad, flip through 44. Oh, 44 is a senior. Good. So I have a chance I can wear 44. But it was all, you know, I played tight end and, on offense, but it was I just wanted to be a part of what was going on in Gainesville on the defensive side. And Ron Zook was the first defensive coordinator for me, but we went through three of them. Bobby Pruitt, who then went to Marshall as the head coach and won a Division II national championship with Eric Kresser and Randy Moss. And then, of course, Coach Stoops, Bob Stoops, was our defensive coordinator my senior year, the year we won the national championship.
And then take us through after. When did you start the Luther Ogle series? I know it wasn't posted on YouTube till much later, but how'd you get into that and bringing Peyton Manning and some making fun of these volunteers during a big rivalry week?
Tina, do you want to come and tell them about Luther Ogle? Oh, no. Oh, she hates Luther Ogle. That's my.
I had to show Emily for the first time right before this show, and she was speechless, I'll say.
Yeah. She said grossed out. Well, so, okay. It really goes back to when, you know, back then when I was in high school and then early on when I was at Florida, UT was the only game in town, and as far as the volunteer state. I mean, the Titans weren't there. Vandy was no count. As they say there in East Tennessee, they're no count. That's what makes it so much fun. It's what makes the SEC so much fun. It's such a passionate fan base. And some of those call-in shows, you know, win or lose, but especially after a loss, it's some of the funniest stuff you've ever heard. So we would go to Neyland and we'd win, and then we'd get on the bus getting ready to go to the airport, and they turn on the call-in shows, and these grown men calling in, "Oh, boys, Phil Fulmer's got to go, boys, he's got to go," and they cry, and it was really funny. So I was doing this, and you guys had Doring on not too long ago, and Doring hosted a show, a leased access show, kind of like Wayne's World, which is a little bit before your time, but hopefully you guys know what Wayne's World is about. And so Doring hosted this show, and then he got picked back up, I think it was by the Broncos then. And so the producers over there at Cox Cable, they called me and they said, "Hey, we want you to come in and fill in for Doring." And so, you know, it's kind of like a little talk show. Whoever wants to come in and bring in, sit down and talk for an hour live on Wednesday nights. But now I had an outlet for all these super great ideas that Tina Bates loves so much and that you guys got to enjoy in class. All the, you know, I had like an outlet to like make these little dumb skits. So we were actually doing, I think we were shooting a video for the Criminals, and it was a time when FSU, all the players were getting in trouble. Like, they had so many guys that got in trouble and got arrested. And so to the tune of Still Rock and Roll to Me, we did a little video of Still the Criminals to Me. But right around that time, Tennessee was upset by Arkansas. And it was around Halloween, and it was when the Billy Bob Teeth first came out. It was like, whoa, look at me. Oh, look at this. This is great. And, you know, so everybody was like, that was the thing. We're in those Billy Bob Teeth. And so I had some, and I just happened to have like like this orange Tennessee or bright orange hat. And they got upset by Arkansas. And so we shot on the day we were shooting that Criminals video. I'm like, "Hey, let me try this. Let me try writing a poem." And I used to work at Ogle's Water Park, which is gone now, up in Pigeon Forge. That was my summertime job. And it was tough work. I mean, you'd have to sit there. You'd have to wait for the kids to get all the way to the bottom before you said, "Go." And then you'd get in a lot of trouble. If you didn't wait till they got all the way to the bottom, you'd get in a lot of trouble. And you'd say, "Go." And so I worked at Ogle's Water Park, and there are a lot of Ogles up there in Sevier County. And Luther, I don't know, Luther just felt like a good fit for Luther Ogle. And so that's kind of where Luther was born, and the poem went, and it was just, and everything with Luther was always just way, way, way extra. And it was, and let me make sure I got it, and it was last Saturday, my Vols was looking so pretty. The way T. Martin was throwing the pill and Raynock was tackling, all coached by Fat Phil. So I said to myself, Arkansas, heck, they ain't nothing. I'll just get my gun and I'll do me some hunting. I shot me a bird, I shot me a possum. All the while thinking, being a Vol is so awesome. But when I got home and I looked at the, I walked in the door and I looked at the score and we done lost by 4. And then it was just like Luther just crying for like 3 minutes too long. And it was it's just like, and like dip spit dripping down his chin. So that's how Luther was born. And we used to have kids that would come trick-or-treating at our house dressed as Luther Ogle, and they didn't even know we lived there. And so I'd run in and put on my Luther Ogle gear. And a guy about 2 years ago commissioned a painting for his buddy. He wanted a Peyton Manning's autograph painting. And I'm like, okay, well, here's where my commissions start price-wise. And he's like, no, I have to have it. I have to have it. I'm like, okay, here I go. And it's like, I really was proud of the way that turned out. And it had Peyton's Manning about 3 inches above my crack. Peyton Manning's autograph. I'll hang it on my wall. Right next to the other Tennessee Vols. Is Key West Sam coming on?
He's coming on.
Okay.
That's awesome, Batesy. He should be here any minute. I see why Tennessee fans hate us so much, by the way. my question for you was, first of all, thank you so much. This is so cool that you're coming on talking to a couple knuckleheads like us. I grew up in the state of Georgia, spent most of my life in the state of Georgia. Half my family's Florida State fans, but there's one school.
So are you from Southwest Georgia then? Down no, by? Sir.
No. I'm from Jacksonville and grew up close to Atlanta.
Okay.
So spent a lot of time around some Georgia fans. Spent Thanksgivings around FSU fans. But the one school that my dad hated growing up was Tennessee. And it's because, you know, he graduated in 1989. He was in his 20s for the whole 90s of Florida, Tennessee. Can you walk us through kind of, you know, that rivalry and how it became the biggest rivalry in college football throughout the 90s?
Why is it so much fun to hate on Tennessee? It's like, I think it's the orange. I think it's the color orange. I don't know. You see it in the airport and you're like, oh, it's like, oh, so it's kind of hard to explain to someone now, but it was basically because it was usually the second or third game of the season, and early to mid 90s, who in the SEC East, whoever won that game was probably going to win the SEC, and it happened so fast. And you know, I think really one thing that kind of really kind of shows what it meant was a guy that I played with that was a year ahead of me at Sevier County. His name was Jason Lehman. He was an All-American offensive lineman. He went to Tennessee and had a great career there. But his senior year, so in 95, we beat Tennessee, and he said his interview after the game, he said, well, there goes our season. And it was the third game of the year. Like, you imagine, like, but it really was that big. Whoever won that game was probably going to go on and win the SEC. And so it's, man, it was such a big game to finally, you know, to finish it off my senior year, go back up to Tennessee. It was always raining. All through the 90s, it was always pouring down rain, which was kind of cool when we were kicking Arch Manning's ass that it started raining too. All those Manning boys come to the swamp, and when it rains on them, when it rains, it pours, boys. And so it was to go up there and make it 4 in a row against, you know, such a good team and such a passionate fan base. It's, you know, and I, to be honest, for the longest time, I really enjoyed like watching Tennessee lose. And I was just like, it was like, oh man, I hate Tennessee. And then it got to where I was like, now, you know what? Because when it really got down, kind of like, unfortunately, like it feels like in our camp right now a little bit. It's like, man, I started feeling sorry for him. I'm like, nah, I don't hate on him anymore. I want him to be competitive. I want him to give us a run, and I want them to win these other games now. But I used to not feel that way. But I've changed a little bit with Tennessee. I mean, it's a lot of good people up there, a lot of great fans, passionate fans, and they're what make college football great. And but I hope we get after him on Saturday. That's for sure.
Batesy, it's always been a historic rivalry, Florida and Tennessee, and obviously you played through, some of probably the best games through it. One thing I like to remind Tennessee fans this week is that Peyton Manning never beat Florida, and you got to be a part of those games. Were you out there playing on the Lawrence Wright hit, and kind of what was that game like in that moment like?
Wait, Jacob, didn't Peyton won one game in the Swamp?
Did he?
Peyton Manning never beat Tennessee.
Peyton.
You haven't won a game in the Swamp.
Peyton, yeah, Jacob. I think he won one game in the Swamp, didn't he?
Eli did.
See, there, I'm going to let you in on someone. Hey, push pause so no one else hears this, because you can make some good money off Gator fans. I gotcha. And here's the deal. Okay, so I guess it would have been Peyton's senior year. They were redoing the Gator Bowl, and they were turning it into Alltel.
Yeah.
And so they had to play Virginia Tech in the Gator Bowl in Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, and Tennessee won. So you can make see how I could have set you up right there, and I could have been like, I don't know, I think he did. I think he won a game in the Swamp. I could have made $100 off you easy right there. You can make a lot of money off of Gator fans by playing it dumb like that. There you go.
Hey,
and you owe me nothing.
Right,
you owe me nothing, Jacob. You owe me nothing. All right. Tell me, I'm sorry, what was your question again, Mr. Lovelace?
What were some of those 90s matchups like? Did you have a favorite memory, whether it was going up to Tennessee and, probably playing against some of your former teammates? Was it playing against Peyton Manning? What were some of those favorite memories from the rivalry that you had yourself?
Yeah, just, what comes to mind first is just those teams. And you mentioned Lawrence Wright earlier, and it's just, Lawrence Wright was, that was my best buddy. We lived in the Beverly Hills section of Yon Hall, and a freshman brother, and just like going on the road, really, not just Tennessee, but together. I mean, we really had so much fun together, and we cared about each other so much that it was just so much fun to like just go into battle together. And I hope that they still feel like that. I say they, I mean like all college football players, because it's like, guys in and out, it's so transient. I hope that they still have that same feeling of brotherhood and, kind of us against the world type of mentality, because and that's what it's like, when you go into Neyland Stadium and you've got 100,000 screaming at you, wanting to see you go down, and you just find a way to win, and have fun doing it, and then you got Coach Spurrier, just at the end, just talking trash. It was a good time. It was more than magical. I thought I knew what I was getting into when I came here out of high school, but I had no idea. And I think that that's kind of part of the reason why. You look at the coaches now that, we've got to hire a new one, and I sure hope it's Lane Kiffin. I mean, that's my number 1, 2, 3, and 4 choice. And I think part of it is because we were spoiled by Coach Spurrier, because not only were we having fun, slinging the ball around, and winning, but it was, he played that game of he'd kind of jab people and play the, what was the social media game back then, whatever that means. But like, look at Lane, he plays that game. I feel like now it's hard to kind of like embrace a lot of these kids, because you're not sure if they're going to be there for 2 years, some one and done, and then poof. And so it's hard to really, Pyburn, oh wow, this is going to be a great run. He wants to be a Gator, and then he's gone. So I think if you have a coach that you really enjoy, and everyone else may think he's an a-hole, but he's our a-hole, or whoever it is. I mean, it's like, it's just I think it's very important that we get a coach that we all really want to rally around and that we, you know, can get to know, because it's really tough. A lot of the players aren't necessarily in it for the long haul. Is that Key West Sam down there? Is that?
Hey, Batesy.
Hey, look at that. Look, I got on my Fighting Conk shirt.
Yeah, I'll do you one better. I love to see it. Appreciate you repping my boys. Still hold a couple school records there. Not a big deal. But awesome to see you, Batesy. Sorry for being late. Had to finish up, you know, the day job. But it's great to see you, man. Thanks for joining. And I'll raise you one. I know you might be thinking, what's up with the coat, Sam? It can't be that cold in Arizona. It's not. But you better believe I got to rep the Batesy Has Class shirt. Come on now. You know we still got the Batesy Has Class. Come on.
Hey. And y'all boys were in one of the best classes ever. We had fun. That was a good class. We used to do parent tunnels. Devin, we used to make parent tunnels for Ahmad Black when he needed a little extra motivation to come out and do his stand-up. And, yeah, those were some good times. That's where I learned – that was the first time I learned that dudes were actually vaping in my class when you guys were breaking down the Boysenberry vape, Big Smoke and Little Smoke and whatever it all was. I had no idea. But now I'm on the lookout. I haven't caught anybody yet. But thanks to you guys, at least I'm alert and I know it might be going on.
Yeah, I'm sure it's only gotten worse. And there's just so many devices. I'm sure kids these days have a Ticonderoga number 2 pencil and they take a couple hits out of that. And then it's a cloud of smoke in Batesy's class. But no, thanks for joining us. I'll kind of let you guys pick up, you know, and then I'll interject, you know, my thoughts. But love hearing the passion. I can already tell the passion coming out of you for Tennessee week, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, man. Well, I thought it was like a 2-hour difference to Arizona, but I didn't realize it's like is it a 12-hour difference? Because this is the latest breakfast I've ever had.
Yeah, no, we're big breakfast for dinner advocates in this household, Batesy.
You know,
every now and then you might be out of groceries, but you typically have a bowl of cereal if you need it. You know, pancake mix is easy to come by. So we can eat breakfast 24/7 over here, especially if you're coming to join with us.
All right.
Batesy, I want to ask you about 1995. So you guys are down at halftime and then you come out in the second half and absolutely smoke Tennessee. What was it that Coach Spurrier said that just in the halftime adjustments that would flip the games and let you guys take off in the second half like that?
Oh, man. I don't know, Will. Well, you see, I don't know. I wish I knew. Coach Spurrier would know. Coach Spurrier would know, like, the what he said at halftime of Duke in 1989. Blame it on too many hits to the head. I wish I had a good story for you there. Speaking of 95, though, I did go play for the Alumni Association. I had to play 95 college football on Sega Genesis today with Nate. Nate was a student of mine a couple of years ago. He was hosting it. And, you know, I have a lot of hits to the head to blame that, like, sometimes I kind of, like, I got to, like, lock in. I got to focus. I don't know what Nate's excuse is, but we're kind of alike along those lines. And we're sitting here trying to play this 95 Sega Genesis. I probably played it at one point, but I was more like an NHL hockey guy back then. He had never played it. And he's trying to interview me, and we're doing this show. And we're trying to do two things at once, play a football video game, call plays, run plays, and answer questions. And I'm sure it'll come out on Instagram the next few days, but it is the biggest mess you've ever seen. Like, I was like, look, whoever's up at halftime, we're done. I got to get back to Yulee. This is just, it took so long. The final score was 8-4. I won, but I had two safeties because I was just trying to answer questions, and he would, like, I'd get a safety. So it was so there's my 90. I think that's the answer, Will. I think that's what Spurrier told us is don't get safeties. Focus, Batesy. You guys, you need to pay attention brick by brick like Butch Jones.
Well, whatever he said, it clearly worked because you guys did a whole lot of winning. And Florida hasn't been doing all that much winning since Urban Meyer left. So you already said that, you know, you want Lane Kiffin here. What is it that you think that Lane Kiffin could bring to Florida that Florida has been missing over the last 15 or so years that we just haven't been? I mean, we've been to Atlanta a handful of times since then.
You know, I just think he's just got an energy to him, and he does. He reminds people. He's always looked up to Spurrier. He just has that similar energy to him. You know, an offensive guy, likes to throw it around a lot. You know, and spread you out, and you know he just has some good juice and some good fire to him, and I've just enjoyed watching him coach and. Anybody else that's out there, I can't think of anybody else that I would want to come in here and take over our team. I mean, gosh, it's just, I want to find the right guy and somebody that's going to be here for the long haul. It just seems like a good fit, on a lot of fronts. And he really seems to, you know, he's always talked up the program. You talk to some people that know him and, you know, for years, he's always talked about that this is like, you know, really a job that he's always kind of set his sights on. I just have a pretty good feeling that we're going to have a good chance of bringing him to town.
Did his dad and your dad ever cross paths with their times in the NFL?
No, his dad and my brother might have in Tampa there with Gruden. But I don't think so because they were both at that point, they were both defensive coordinators. Yeah, and I don't know. I'm not positive with my brother though, but I know that that he and my dad, I don't think that they were ever on the same staff.
Well, I think we were one of the first podcasts to endorse Lane Kiffin, to offer our official endorsement like it was a political candidate.
Because you guys did our breakfast. Everybody else did it at lunchtime.
Right, exactly. Exactly. But I think when you look at the fact that Lane, he's churning out 10-win seasons at Ole Miss, Florida, I think we had, two of those with Mullen, and they were kind of a little fugazi 10-win seasons. And so I just think if he can raise the floor of Florida and then he can pick up the recruiting to get us kind of into that top 10 roster level, his offensive mind will just take over and be a perfect fit. And he'll be giving Kirby fits and then probably calling him fat after the game and different things like that, that he's been doing at Ole Miss.
Exactly. Entertain us. We got spoiled with the head ball coach. We want to be entertained and kick people's butts.
It's like there's a lot of coaches that are good play callers and a lot of coaches that are good interviews, but you get just the perfect combination of that.
Yeah.
Like the right coach at the right time. The fan base is hungry. The fan base is ready for it. And speaking of Lane, there's been a lot of talk about the good old days from Lane these last couple weeks as he's kind of going into the decision of if he's going to leave for Florida or LSU or stay at Ole Miss. But speaking of the good old days, the 1996 national championship, you know, we're playing FSU, getting a rematch in the Sugar Bowl. Can you talk about just the month leading up to that? And then obviously the stakes get raised the week of the game. We find out that it's a de facto national championship game. What was that like when you're, you know, preparing going into the Sugar Bowl to play your biggest rival for a chance to win a national championship?
Yeah. And speaking of hungry, look at Lulu and Junior back there. They're looking good and hungry in the swamp this weekend. That's gosh, right. You know, that was a fun run because, you know, one versus two in Tallahassee, we go there and kind of like didn't have a really clean game and they beat us. And so that was it. And it's tough. And the year before, you know, we worked so hard. We had a great season, regular season. Off we go to Arizona. And I thought we were going to get after Nebraska. We had, you know, we had all these guys that ran the option in high school. And so we could get a look, felt like we could get a look of what we're going to see defensively. But how in the world are those guys in Lincoln going to imitate and practice what Spurrier's going to throw at them? But boy, was I wrong. And they wore us out. So we made it all the way there, got so close, and we didn't finish. And so, you know, and it fueled us in the offseason.
Oh no!
He wasn't.
He'll be back, and he's gonna come back, and he's gonna have so much energy.
Yeah, that was on the way to being an all-time story too.
There we go. It's just a cliffhanger right there.
I don't know what happened.
All good.
And so, it doesn't just take hard work and talent, but you got to have some luck. And we were about to find out what that luck was all about. Another good run throughout the season. Then we lose that game. And so that was it. Our hopes were done. We're getting another good run, another SEC championship. Oh shoot, 4 SEC championships in a row. And Nebraska was playing Texas in the Big 12 championship game. And that was the afternoon before we played Alabama that night in the SEC championship game. And, we knew what Nebraska was all about. There's no way Texas is going to beat them. And then they did. And when they did, we were still in the hotel there in downtown Atlanta. And it was like, it was like an explosion in the hotel when James Brown was the quarterback for Texas. And it was, I want to say they went for it on fourth down, fourth and long, to seal the deal. And when they got this first down and the game was over, so we knew that with that, we were going to have a chance at a rematch if we won that night. But as soon as that happened, boom, every door on this floor that we were on, I can still picture Big Mo Collins. What a great dude. And we miss him. May he rest in peace. What a great teammate, great guy. Big Mo Collins. And all these big offensive linemen out there just jumping around in their underwear, hugging each other, everybody running up and down the halls, just to be like a regular person just staying there at that hotel. It would have been the funniest thing. Like, oh my gosh, like what's going on? So needless to say, we were going to go and we were going to beat up on Alabama that night. And we did. So SEC championship and the rematch was set because of that upset earlier in the day. So now we were going to have a rematch, the fifth quarter and the French quarter, which was a term they used back when the choke it doke and we tied 31-31. But it was a rematch in New Orleans. But the night before that one, for us to call ourselves national champions, we had to have Ohio State beat Jake the Snake Plumber in the Rose Bowl in Arizona State, and because Arizona State was undefeated. And so I remember I was down in Zach Piller's room, and we were watching that game, and that was an exciting game to the very end. I think it was David Boston was the receiver's name who had a big catch there at the end to help win the game. But so we're there, and Zach Piller, he like jumps up and he ripped his, Piller was huge. He ripped his like corduroy pants that he got from the Big and Tall men's shop from like zipper to belt loop on the back, just ripped him wide open. And he blamed it on me. He said, because I got him too excited. And he knew that I knew how to sew. And so I had to go down he went down and got it, but I had to sit there and sew the crotch, the sweaty, nasty corduroy crotch of Piller's pants the night before our national championship game, and hit pause. So my wife is a swimmer. We've two daughters that swam at Florida. My wife was an All-American swimmer there, and the swimmers, they train so much harder than any of these football players, and they work, but then for the big meet for their SEC championship or national championship or Olympics, they'll rest and they'll shave their entire bodies, the women and the men, because it makes them feel faster in the water. There's no drag at all. So earlier that day, I'm like, well, this is my big meet, a little tip of the cap to Tina Bates. So I shaved my whole body, and I'm already starting to like break out in like hives and stuff. And it's just like, and so I'm sitting there, I've got all these bumps that are forming all over my body because I've shaved my whole body, and I'm sewing. And it took me a good hour because I had, you got that little skinny hotel kit. So I had to like double it all up, and I'm sewing the crotch of his pants. We finally go and, get to bed and head back on into New Orleans the next day and took care of business. I had a concussion at halftime. It was probably the only one they actually called a concussion. Everything else was just getting your bell rung. And but thanks to that, I have a very interesting class that Jackson and Jacob and Key West Sam got to take a part of. Yeah, Batesy has class. But no, but that was a crazy run, and we needed a lot of things to happen. And that's, you know, that's part of it, the luck of college football. And that's what, no matter how good you are, you still need a little bit of luck to make it all the way and to call yourselves champions and to win those football games.
And when did it sink in that, you know, you're calling yourselves champions and you did it against those guys? Like, was there a certain moment during the game or after the game where you were like, man, this is one of those all-time historic, 29 years from now, a bunch of 20-year-olds are going to be asking about this on a podcast kind of games?
Maybe when we were at the Cats Meow on Bourbon a little bit later and we were like singing karaoke to the Clash or something like that. It's still to me, I just have always loved college football, the pageantry behind it. And I was telling my son the other day, I was breaking down because I used to have, when I was a junior and senior in college, they could, this is when they first could burn CDs. So, like, you know, my mixtape. And so I had a guy who actually was a swimmer, a techie guy. I had him burn me a CD, and I had a lot of Guns N' Roses on there. The Vandals, which is this punk band, Pearl Jam, Cypress Hill, Scarface, the Ghetto Boys. And then I had Hail to the Victors, the Michigan fight song, because I just loved stuff like, you know, like Rocky Top. Like, I love Rocky Top. I love the Chop. I mean, I just like all that stuff. It just fires me up, and it always has from a very young age. And so, I mean, it was always a dream of mine to be a part of big time college football and to play in big games that were the gossip and that mattered. And man, I certainly made the right choice on becoming a Florida Gator. And I go into the swamp now and I see that paint up there, and it's just like, you know, that'll always be there. Nobody will ever take that away from us. And it's just like, it's such a cool feeling to be a part of that. And it really is a cool feeling to be a part of the University of Florida, to teach a class there. And I mean, I'm so proud to be a Gator, and not just out on the football field, but I also, it pains me for the kids that come through, and again, not just the football players, that don't get to experience those runs. You know, I get it. It's not realistic that you're going to win 4 straight SEC championships, but like, I want so bad for my students, for all the Gators, to see what it's like when it's a Wednesday and you can feel that there's a home game on Saturday and everybody's buzzing, and, you know, and here come all the big production trucks and everybody's getting ready. It's just a real cool feeling when you're the gossip of the college football world. And I just want that for our fans. I want that for our students again. I just like it. It just crushes me that some of these kids will come through here, spend 4 years and not really feel what that's like just every now and then. Like, you got a Texas game. Oh, that was nice. The end of last season was very nice. I mean, that felt a little bit more like it. That was for sure.
We've been talking about on the podcast that basketball did a little bit to that, of that, to just sort of remind people what the University of Florida is. And I think it also was important in getting our sort of upper level administration and our athletic administration and the boosters and the fans and sort of everybody aligned to realize that, you know, when we're all kind of pulling in the same direction, that the University of Florida is a force to be reckoned with throughout the country. So hopefully that'll translate into some football success, and we can get really crazy on Saturdays in the fall.
Yeah, and I was looking at it, next year's home schedule. I thought this year was you know, looking on paper going into it, like, wow, this is a pretty good home schedule. Next year is really good too.
Yeah.
Bateson, it's a little bit more. You're talking about Spurrier, the way he coached. You called games in the ACC. I don't think you no longer do that. I don't know if you did that when the NIL era started, but with a new coach coming in, just talk about the difference of what you've seen around, whether it's the schools you call for ACC games or being around Florida now, the difference in the coaching style. Like you mentioned earlier, you might have a kid here for a year, maybe 2 years, and the coaching style, especially how tough they are on them. You know, no coach is grabbing face masks anymore like they did back in your day. Just talk about the challenge of a coach, especially in this era of getting guys to stay and be part of the program.
I don't envy him. I mean, I will say this. So, you know, I did a lot of Mike Elko's games when he was at Duke, and I'll guarantee you he's grabbing some face masks. You know, I mean, like he's intense, and you have to have a little bit of that. You have to. I talked about the end of last year and how nice it was. It was nice because we were winning these games that we weren't supposed to, but it was also nice, wasn't it, that we're like, oh, good. He's going to be fine. We're not going to have to go through this. Oh, who's going to be our coach? We're firing someone, going to pay him, you know, millions of dollars to leave. And wow, good, good. We don't have to deal with any of that. Everything's going to be okay.
He fell off again.
Hard out, Batesy.
Nope, he should be back. But I'm actually surprised. I forgot that him doing ACC games, calling some of Elko's games.
Elko, yeah. Jacob down there. Jacob was pushing a bunch of stuff. I think that was Jacob's fault.
Yeah, that was on me.
Don't do that. Don't do that, man. Stop. Just sit still. Well, we can talk to you and stop it. Stop. And that's the most frustrating thing. I mean, I appreciate Coach Napier's hustle, but the one thing that just frustrated the heck out of me is that nobody seemed to get their ass chewed. Like, and one example to me that stands out, the game at Utah, what, 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Big game for them, and I was around Kyle Whittingham a lot when I called Mountain West Conference games, and I like Coach Whittingham a lot, like, you know, a lot of those guys out there, Kalani Sitake, who's the head coach at BYU. I mean, just great people, and it's crazy because a lot of them, Whittingham played at BYU, and now he coaches, and they hate each other, but it's like there's a – it's like sleeping with the enemy, those two schools. And it's really kind of funny how, you know, you think that some of our rivalries are bad. They really get after each other. But, like, the end of that game, and if you remember, I mean, we were sloppy. And, like, we always start the season. I mean, dang, that was – how are we going to come out of two-a-days and start the season like that? And we were just sloppy and personnel, penalties, jumping off sides. And you never saw anybody get upset on the sideline. Then at the very end of the game, game's in the bag, Utah's won it, they get revenge, huge win for them, victory formation, they're going to take a knee, and they had too many men or not enough men, something on the field, and they had to call a timeout. Game's over. Kyle Whittingham goes up and down that sidelines, and he chews everyone's ass on that sideline. The game's over. It's like 90 seconds maybe left in the game, and it's and that to me is like you have to have a little bit of that. You have to, and it's, and I don't know what it was, if like you know, you gotta get them here and keep them here, and I get that, but man, we got to have somebody with some fire that's willing to just, you know, just call someone out when they need to be, and you know, and get on them, because you know, they're young guys. I was there. I mean, I needed to get my butt chewed, you know. And did get my butt chewed a lot. We all did, and we were better because of it. You know, and if it hurts your feelings, then maybe this isn't the right place for you. I mean, that's just because I know one thing's for sure. Like, I've been around Elko. You see Elko. I mean, he gets hot. Concepcion was at NC State when I was calling those ACC games, and you knew he wasn't going to last there for long. You know, A&M going to come around with some of that oil money and bring him to town. So It's changed. It's very different now these days.
Batesy, are there any of those coaches that you saw that are kind of under the radar, you know, still up and coming type coaches that stuck out to you that impressed you when you were calling games in the ACC Mountain West times?
Well, you know, there, I don't know if it would be under the radar. I'm a big Brent Venables fan. I mean, there's another guy. He's not going to let you get away with a whole lot of that type of stuff. I'm a big Dabo fan. I've always liked Dabo. I have appreciated him. Elko, you could tell. I mean, that he was a competitor and a heck of a football coach. We wouldn't go hire probably Manny Diaz, but I really liked him. You know, Lashley, I had when he was an offensive coordinator, had a couple of his games, and he's doing pretty well out at SMU. But, you know, nobody really that I could say under the radar type of guy. An under the radar guy that I would be excited about, who I think is one of the best coaches out there, is Kerwin Bell. Again, you know, Napier came from Louisiana, so you probably wouldn't go that route. You're not going to go that route, like to go to a, you know, Western Carolina and get a Kerwin Bell. But if like my dream team, like, and I'm being serious, like if we didn't get Lane, if somebody said, hey, Shane Matthews and Kerwin Bell are taking over the team, I'd be a happy Gator. And I think we'd be, that's a pretty good start. And Kerwin's son has done a fantastic job as the offensive coordinator up there at Pitt.
I was just going to say he's, you know, obviously not a great weekend last weekend, but they've put it together well this year.
I gotta say all of you, I'm a little bit disappointed that nobody here, Thanksgiving week, nobody said anything about my hat. And if one of you know what that's kind of referring to, I'll send you guys a shirt. I'll send someone a shirt. Could be a winner here on this podcast, this breakfast.
I totally know, Bates. I totally know. Send me one, right? But hey, I know you got to run.
I totally. Oh, okay. I'll send you one. Yeah. Just give me your address because you know. What is it?
Not safe for a family show, you know. But anyways, Bates, back to the program. I know you got to get out of here soon, but take a moment to kind of plug the Batesy Paints, all the artwork. You got a great piece behind us. Tell us about your work. What got you into it? You know, let the people know.
Yeah, that's – well, you know about those poons, the tarpon down there in Key West.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
My son's a fishing captain here, Amelia Island area, Fernandina. And he likes to go after those tarpon, and I like doing some, when I'm not doing some of the football guys, I like to do some landscapes or some tarpon, and I just feel so blessed to be able to create for a living and paint and make things happen. And I don't think that's bad hat though. I don't know what you're referring to, Sam.
I was just trying to get some free merch, I'll be honest.
Oh, see? I was like, you made me feel bad for a second. I'm like, oh, no. None of you guys know. Come on.
We can be Jackson. Honest together, Bates. I was just trying to get a free merch. Like you said, it's a great-looking hat. So you got me. You called my bluff. You're a smart
Stevie,
guy. But.
Stevie, your hint is Stevie Janowski.
Yeah, he's found it down. The Feeksons.
There you go.
There it is. You're up in, I heard you say earlier, are you in Yulee now?
Yeah, we live in Yulee.
I just bought a house up here a couple months ago.
Really?
Yeah, right down the road. We're neighbors.
Wow. Yeah. We're in the Pirate's Wood. Where are you at, Devin?
I'm in Tributary.
Where's the Tributary?
it's closer to Wildlight. It's less over, not as far over towards the island.
Okay. I'm doing a podcast here.
That's awesome.
Well, holler at me. We'll have to go up to the Green Turtle and watch the Whiskey Heart Boys play some music. That's cool, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey Jacob, who's the most famous football player ever to come out of Yulee, Florida?
Oh, it's got to be Derrick Henry, right?
Okay, good. Okay, that was a lot better than Key West Sam's answer.
You didn't ask me a football related question. I mean, before we let you go, Bates, it would be not good of us if we didn't, you know, get a little HBC impression out of you. I don't know if it's maybe you're in the locker room giving the boys a pump up speech for Saturday's game against the Vols, or maybe if you're talking to our potential future head coach. We need a little HBC from you for the listeners.
Oh man. Okay. Well, let me see.
It's gonna give you some time to cook. And
yeah, he's like, just thinking right now.
Banger. Yeah. And we'll let him get on with his way, because my goodness, is this man absolutely fired up. I love it.
Yeah. Jacob again. Okay. Let's see. Ernie Batto was he was a gosh one of the best defensive linemen in the country coming out of Curtis High School in New Orleans, and I hosted Peyton 1 year. He went to Tennessee. I'm not sure whatever happened to him after that. And then a guy named Darryl Bush, who went All-American linebacker from Lake Brantley, that went to Florida State. But Ernie Batto was the only guy that I hosted that I got. And they're like, hey, we got to get this guy. He's the number two defensive lineman in the nation. And I met him. And like, you guys know Jake Kubel? Did you guys, any of you know him?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, like, New Orleans, they're like, it's a different world, those dudes, man. They're great dudes, but there's like a totally different world. And Batto takes it to the extremes. And so Batto, I was like, I don't care if he ever plays. This guy's the funniest guy I've ever met. We got to get him here. Like, he would stand up on these bar stools at, Lillian's. I think it was Lillian's downtown, and he would, like, this is on his visit. So, you know, you're a high school guy, and you're with all these college folks, and you're like, you know, you're kind of a little bit like just trying to get a feel and fit in a little bit, but not Batto. Batto would like stand up on a bar stool and squat down, and like a big dude too, and he would yell, hey, who's that big dude? And he would stand up on the bar stool and be like, who, me? Who, me? And I mean, it's just like, this guy was nuts, and he was like, it just so funny. So he got in trouble. He signed with the Gators, came to summer school, and he got in trouble like his first summer there. And Spurrier came up to me one day, and he's like, Macy, you hang around Batto a little bit, don't you? Yes, sir. Yeah, well, he acts a little bit too crazy. And when he looks up to you, when you act crazy, he thinks it's okay to act crazy. So what do you say? Let's not act crazy around Batto anymore. What do you say? I'm like,
oh, man. Jacob, you got to stop, kid.
He's gonna come back fired up on
that. It's that Yuli Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Hey, man. This is incredible.
No. He's just cooking too much with the Spurrier right now. String can't have it.
No.
The gears are churning right now for Batesy.
We got to move aside Doring, move aside Tate, move aside Billy Latsko, move aside Corey. This is the greatest interview in Breakfast with the Gators history.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to figure out, Devin, you're going to have to tell me how to get that fiber Wi-Fi, get that good connection out here in Yulee. So the very next day, I'm in the training room.
Just a few moments here. He's attempting for our listeners.
Oh, are you guys not hearing me now? Can you hear me?
No, we got you.
We hear you.
Okay. And so the next day I'm in the training room and messing around with the trainers, and I look up and there's Coach Spurrier. And he's just looking at me scowling. He goes, Batesy, I thought we talked about you calming down a little bit. And I was like, yeah, but that was just around Batto, Coach. He's like, oh, you're right. You're right. Go ahead. And it's like, I mean, we go fishing with Batto every now and then. My son and I will go over and meet him, go fish for the big reds down there in Hopedale. But yeah, man, Coach Spurrier, man, one of a kind. Have all of y'all met Coach Spurrier?
We actually we're trying to get Coach Spurrier on the show to tell a few stories if we have a bit of a connection.
Yeah, we should get Spurrier on to ask him his best Bates stories. That would be
right. Yeah. Bates is not
right there.
Yeah.
There
we go. We're actually trying to get Spurrier on the show if we know any connections that I know he's always on Pat Dooley. So if we got any connections currently on this show right now, we would be very grateful.
What has Coach been saying about has he said anything about Kiffin?
Yeah.
Does he seem to be a fan of Kiffin?
My dad My dad watches Shane Matthews' show and every single show Steve Spurrier does religiously. And he has said that Spurrier has been talking about, and Shane have been talking about, Lane Kiffin for more than a year. And so I think he's been, you know, politicking a little bit with, hasn't come out and said, we've got to hire Lane Kiffin, but he's said repeatedly that he thinks Lane Kiffin would be a good hire. So you can kind of read between the lines, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I know Shane is a big fan too. Shane, Shane's hoping we can get him to town too. That'd be fun.
Shane seems awfully confident.
He's a Mississippi boy. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were just, all of us on here outside of Key West Sam were just in Oxford this past weekend for the game. And they are pretty hostile, knowing we're trying to steal their head coach after three straight 10-win seasons and a potential playoff berth coming up. So it was quite the weekend in the Velvet Ditch.
Oh, I hope we can make them all sad. I hope we can take away their guy. That'd be a fun one.
It would be. Well, Batesy, man, I greatly appreciate it. We all do, for you joining us. If you want to plug your Twitter and Instagram, where our listeners can find you, all your artwork, and all your social medias.
Okay. It's http://. www.batesy, but that's not B-A-T-E-S-Y. It's the number eight, B-8-S-Y, paint, P-A-I-N-T, no spaces, .com. It's just that easy. And if you're trying to get to the shop to buy some merchandise, then it would be http://, www.batesy, but not like B-A-T-E-S-Y. It's just the B, the number eight, S-Y, paint, /shop. It's just that easy. Thanks. Hey, guys. Hey, you guys are awesome, man. I'm so glad to know all of y'all and to have had you in class. And anytime you guys need anything, just holler at me, okay?
Thank you for that. We got to get your prediction for Saturday.
Core prediction for Saturday. What is it, Batesy?
Oh, I think we're going to win. I don't know that I would have said that this time last week because I didn't think we'd play like we did in Oxford. But I think we still got a little something in us and fly around and beat those Vols in the swamp. Gosh, it's so much fun beating Tennessee in the swamp. Last Saturday, my Vols were sitting so pretty. Bye, guys. Go Gators. Give me a score. You want a score?
Yeah, give me a score. 31-24
Gators. No.
Love it. I need a medium shirt, Batesy. Medium shirt. Thank you, my man.
Sam, you almost lied. You didn't lie, but you almost lied.
I came clean.
You did. You came clean.
You're the man, Batesy. Great to see you.
Go Gators.
Go Gators.
Oh, man. What a freaking interview.
That was awesome.
My chin hurts from just smiling, laughing.
Laughing the whole time. He's great, man. Proud Batesy U alum over here. So,
when he went on and on about the sewing the pants the night before the party, I didn't mute myself and almost turned the camera off. I couldn't contain myself.
Well, when he told us to pause and then started talking about the men and women shaving all over, I was really worried for a second about where the story was going to go.
Yeah, God,
that's great. Awesome insight as always from him, though, man.
It is crazy to think that is, hey, and I wouldn't change it for anything, but that was one of my professors, man. University of Florida, baby.
Hey, best one I had too.
Guys that have just mastered the art of the weave. That is an all-time weave guy. It's awesome.
I'm pretty sure one day, I think, I don't know if you remember, Jackson, I don't think anything was like wrong with the lecture hall we were in. He was literally like, I think we all sat down and he goes, all right, guys, we're just going to go outside for this class. And we really just, I think, sat on the lawn of Library West. And that's where he did class, because that's just the way that man rolls, because he's the man.
We also had class inside Ben Hill Griffin Stadium a few times.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
That's right. That was my favorite. Just, hey, walk on over to the swamp and have class.
Hey, that was his former home, living in Yon Hall right there underneath the student section.
He had some good stories.
He had some great stories about that. But, yeah, it's – like Will said, he mentioned, we saw him at the Desire Cup. Will and I did for the event for Danny Werfel's foundation. And with all the former Gators that are speaking, Werfel, Batesy, and just the commentary around the room, it's a consensus that these guys want to get back to the winning ways, especially the way they experienced back then with the fun and gun and the way we used to talk about opponents and hang 50 on them. It's nice to see the former players also embracing what made Florida great, and him naming his top four candidates are all Lane Kiffin.
It is one of the silver linings of the Billy Napier era, as he seems to have unified everybody behind getting the idea of bringing offense back to Florida. And so thank you, Billy Napier, for that. Also, I can't believe he went back. He threw it back to Utah. I'd forgotten about that game. I'd erased it from my memory, but we were all there
somehow.
That was like the inception of the podcast.
Yeah, without really knowing it.
Yeah.
I thought that was very interesting. I did not expect that to be the memory that, you know, stuck at him. That was game one of year two.
Yeah.
That it kind of, you know, people started having their antennas go up about what was wrong with the last staff. It's a shame that it took halfway through year four before we did anything about it. But
It's always interesting getting the perspective of someone who's like close to the program, obviously, given his stature at the university and, you know, relationship with Coach Spurrier, but doesn't have a daily show that's like advertised by the university or, you know, not that public like Shane Matthews or Coach Spurrier and Pat Dooley and them, because, you know, I don't think anybody else has publicly said that, you know, game number 12, they had red flags going up everywhere.
Well, and that was coming off of, wasn't the end of year one, the 30-3 Oregon State, well, the bowl game doesn't really matter, blah, blah, yeah. Blah, game two.
So I guess that was game number 14 coming off of a losing season.
Yeah.
But let's transition some basketball talk before we wrap up. We're already an hour into the show. Will and I were there Sunday night. In Jacksonville at ViStar, number 10 Gators hosted Miami, another in-state rival. We just got done beating Florida State at home, which is always nice. Now first-year head coach Jay Lucas of Miami. Gators win 82-68. Kind of a rough start offensively getting out of the gates, but arguably probably our best team performance outside that opening 10 minutes. I think we had almost a dozen turnovers in that first half. Alex Condon, big game, his best of the year. Ruben Chinleyu, another dominant performance. What'd you guys see, Will, and while you're in attendance, how the Gators are kind of progressing and molding together as we progress into the season?
Yeah, first of all, I thought that it was a great crowd, great showing from the people of Jacksonville. Kind of tough situation with it being an 8:30 start on a Sunday night, on a school night, and there were a lot of kids and a lot of families out there, and the Veterans Memorial Arena was packed. So that was pretty nice to see. The first game against Arizona, I think we all kind of saw the guard struggling and we were like, okay, it makes sense. You know, they haven't played any games together and they're young and they're new, but we were very disappointed in how the front court played. It now seems like through, you know, the UNF game and the FSU game and the Miami game that the front court has taken ownership of that loss against Arizona, and Tommy Howe, Alex Condon, Chinyelu, and Micah Hanlogden have really stepped up to keep the team in the game and then really take over whenever it kind of gets into crunch time. Like Condon hit several big threes, Thomas Howe hit several big threes, and it was like it really just made it so that you needed like 3 to 5 shots from the guards to kind of get it into a comfortable win. And the second thing that I thought was really important was, you know, it sucks that Micah got hurt. I'm sure he probably has a concussion. He got called for a foul when he took an elbow to the head, which only seems to happen to Florida. But I thought it was really good that it sort of tested our depth in the front court, where you had Chinyelu and Condon kind of really playing by themselves at the five spot. and going back and forth. And they got into foul trouble, and it was nice that it was like a respectable opponent that could put a little pressure without the game being in doubt. And so I'm hoping that that's a good teaching lesson, and that they kind of just because you won the national championship last year doesn't mean Pat Adams and all these other terrible referees aren't going to call cheap fouls on you. So good win. Gators were favored by 10.5 and they beat them by 14. The game was never really in doubt other than when Miami made a couple runs to kind of bring it close to tie, but they never really jumped out. And all in all, I thought it was a pretty good showing.
My takeaway from four games has been just – oh, sorry, Jake, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say Will mentioned Condon, Chinyelu, how all had big games, and all you needed was a few shots from the backcourt. And we hadn't quite seen it until maybe, 90 seconds left against FSU, and Urban Klavjar hit the three in the corner. And we were up one at the time. It put us up four. It was a huge three. And then maybe he's starting to catch on to something, because then Miami was by far his best game of the year, especially with Xavier Lee and Boogie Flan just not shooting it too well. Him coming off the bench and nailing a few threes made a world of difference to compliment those big guys. So hopefully his emergence is something that not just a one game thing.
Yeah, my biggest takeaway through the first four games has been I think that Tommy Houck is at a point in his career where he can lead this team in scoring on a night-to-night basis, and we're going to have a number two for him in scoring, and I think that your preseason first-team All-American and Alex Condon should be that guy most nights. Obviously, he didn't play well against Arizona, and we kind of saw how that turned out, that you end up losing a tight game to a really good team on a neutral court. So I think that the point that Jake and the point that Will made that, you don't need your guards to – you don't need these guards to be Walter Clayton or Will Richard or Elijah Martin this year. You just need them to do enough to, when there's a big shot that needs to go down, when there's a big momentum moment that needs to happen for us, you need them to be able to hit, that one shot. Not necessarily a buzzer beater game winner, but, when you're up by one and with 2 minutes left and Urban Klavjar gets a ball in the corner, you need him to be able to make that shot on occasion. He did this week. That's a good development for the backcourt. I don't know that Boogie Fland and Xavier Lee are totally comfortable yet. I think that, we kind of made this point before. I think that the chemistry in the front court is really, really good, and the backcourt guys are still just trying to feel their way through how the roster's put together and how these lineups kind of mesh together. So it's I think Merrimack comes at a good time. It's another opportunity for those backcourt guys to continue to mesh, because it is a hellacious schedule coming up here in a couple weeks, early into December. So get these bye games in, get these games against, not necessarily mid majors, but lower tier high majors, that quad two type games under our belts before we go and test ourselves again against the Dukes and the UConns of the world. So it's exciting. I think we got a good team. I think we got a team that, on November 18th is going to look a lot different come January, and then even more different come March. So it's exciting. We have a great coach leading us, so that always gives you a little bit of comfort.
Yeah, to your point, Dev, Tommy looks the part, to lead the team in scoring. He looks bigger, faster, stronger. The way he's been able to cut to the basket this year has been really noticeable to me. And, yeah, you're absolutely right. He can the offense can run through him. I do worry, in the sense of, Condon being as the guy that has to carry the secondary weight, I do think teams can kind of game plan to neutralize him. And I think you've seen that in the past, and especially Arizona. So that does kind of worry me. And that's where you need that guard or secondary shooter to step up. I think Boogie's kind of starting to find his footing a little bit, but I think we'd all be lying if we wanted to see a little bit more out of Xavier Lee. I think we're all very excited about just kind of the style of play, very different from Walter Clayton in terms of guard, just the pace and everything. But his, the shot making is, yeah, you got to see some of those fall. And it's not that they're just misses. They're off the front of the rim, and it's four games into the season. So want them to be more comfortable. And Urban is getting better coming off the bench. How often can you really rely on that? Remains to be seen. But yeah, Tommy's a ball player, man. We got one of the best in the country, and it's truly awesome that it's Tommy Howe that has made that development, because it's great guy to root for, right?
Yeah. One of the things that I've been most impressed with for Tommy is that every single time a team wins a national championship or has a great run, and then players graduate or they leave, they go to the NFL, NBA, the big question is who's going to take over the leadership role in the locker room. And you can see it clear as day on the court that when, you know, dump fouls happen or somebody doesn't box out, he's the one vocally holding people accountable and leading the team. And it's really good to see, because it's like he's grown up from just this freshman guy who, you know, hit a couple shots and clearly had potential, but you didn't really expect to contribute that much into making game-saving plays against, you know, in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight and into the Final Four. And then now he's like the vocal leader of the team, really. It seems like he's shepherding the guards and showing them, you know, this is what the Florida standard is on a play-by-play basis. And it just seems to really be sticking out outside of how great he's been playing.
Yeah, and I thought the big thing with Urban providing that spark off the bench, 15 points, 4-7 from deep. You know, last year we saw some moments, that Auburn game, I think he hit 3 or 4 that kind of showed you what he can provide for us. Obviously, he lost minutes throughout the season, especially in crunch time. I coming to NCAA tournament time, he wasn't contributing as much. This offseason, I believe he went and played overseas. He had a huge game against Illinois in the secret scrimmage, which Florida Basketball Hour mentioned, you know, hey, this is a guy that this team has been raving about all offseason. Todd Golden mentioned that post game, like, this is Urban that we know. And he was confident from the rip. I thought as soon as he checked in, he was in control of the basketball. He was confident in his shot. He was able to create his shot, right? I kind of more pictured him last year as a catch and shoot guy. But with the kind of inability we've seen our backcourt so far, the starters, for him to provide that spark was huge, and it's going to be big moving forward.
Absolutely. And speaking of Urban, Coach Meyer's going to be introduced into the UF Hall of Fame this week.
College Football Hall of Fame, right?
Or is it the UF Hall of Fame or the UF Hall of Fame?
I don't know. He should be in the Ring of Honor. Go ahead and do it. Absolutely. As a surprise. Yeah,
let's do a surprise.
Get in there, man.
I knew you'd like that, Stan. You couldn't you're keeping your head off screen because
of that. That'll be fun. I'd encourage everybody to go check out the video tribute that he did. It's like 5.5 minutes long, but it's him and Shelly Meyer talking about, they tweeted it out, and it's on Instagram and whatever other platform, but talking about, you know, 5.5 minutes of just memory road and great times. And, you know, it's like, right now, as a Gator fan, we're experiencing so many losses in football, but you look back and they're talking about the cock block and they're talking about beating Ohio State and, all just the greatest parts of Florida football in the last 20 years that put all these national writers who are questioning what the Florida football program is and how good it really is and all that other BS, putting it all to shame. So can't wait for Coach Meyer to be back in the swamp, and I'm sure he'll get a great reception.
Yeah, I have one potential coaching candidate watch that this week. So,
yeah.
Should be a bit of buzz around the swamp.
Hey, speaking of it, what do we got for score predictions?
Start us off, Jake. We'll go around the horn.
You know, there's just something about Tennessee, man. They don't win in the swamp. And I don't care who the coach is, who our coach is. If we haven't had a coach in over a month, how we're playing, it doesn't matter. They don't win in the swamp. It might be ugly, but I'll say Gators 23, Tennessee 19.
Interesting figures there. I'm interested to see Aguilar. Truthfully, I haven't watched a whole lot of Tennessee since the start of the season, and he came out of the gates hot. And, man, they won that Nico trade. Can't tell you how it's looking now, but we've played pretty well against these hypeable offenses. And like Lovey said, they don't come into the swamp and win. So I will go I'll go 27-21 Gators.
Sam, you just stole my prediction. I was going to go 27-21 Gators. Tennessee doesn't win in the Swamp. They didn't win when we were at our lowest points. They sure as hell aren't coming in here with fired up interim coach Billy Gonzalez, Lagway looking a little better, getting some wide receivers back, Caleb Banks coming back to play for the logo. I love it. Playing for the patch. Gators,
right. That's
I don't think it's been said yet, but I don't know if you guys were aware or not, but Tennessee does not win in the Swamp. It's been 22 years. That streak does not end. Billy Gonzalez is going to get his first win as an interim coach of the Florida Gators with his old boss in the building, and it's not going to be all that close. We dominate Tennessee in Gainesville. It happens again. Give me the Gators in their best game of the season, 34-17.
Love it. And Dev, you know, 7:30 kick. What time do we anticipate getting out there to tailgate? 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
Well, I've been reliably informed that you are not allowed to start tailgating until about 3 hours before kickoff. And any time earlier than that is considered rude and bad form.
Hey, can I ask a question? Is there going to be a chandelier on the tent this weekend, or maybe not?
Good question, Jake. No, there will not be.
Okay. Just want to make sure we aren't turning into a wine and cheese crowd after last week.
And Will, just in case your invite got lost in the mail, we will be out there actually about 8 a.m. So almost 12 hours before kickoff, we'll be indulging in all the festivities before, you know, I think you guys might have mentioned Tennessee does not come in here and win in the Swamp. And we're going to set the standard early. Come Saturday morning outside the law school, your old stomping grounds. Like you said, you know, Billy G's former coach in the building, night game on ABC, the 3-7 Florida Gators hosting on at primetime once again. So this logo carries a lot of weight. 17th straight sellout. We don't even have a head coach.
Jackson, are you really getting out there at 8 a.m.?
I'll be out there at 8. I'll be at Publix on 2nd Ave at 7:30 in the morning, get my stuff, be out there at 8 a.m., turn it on College Game Day, and we'll be out there all day.
Poor Emily. Can you get Burkle to stand in a parking spot from the time y'all get there until about 10:30, 11, when I plan on getting there?
I manage I could do that, but I've got the Gators.
Hey, one more question before we get out of here.
I didn't even give my score prediction, Jake.
Oh, didn't mean to jump the gun. That's on me.
It's all right. Gators big, 38-21. We actually score points in the second half this week. It might only be 7, but it's going to be enough for the Gators to hang on to my fellow digits.
Now, why would ESPN be sending their A team to the 3-7 Florida Gators in prime time?
That's a really good question, Jake.
I'm just wondering.
The logo's different.
Is there something going on this week?
It's very different.
Well, I just got information from a young lady sitting next to me that she will be bringing some wine and cheese. I don't know if it's going to be the highest quality. It will be from the Publix Deli and probably just the $12 bottle of wine. I guess I read her text wrong as she's texting me. If we became the wine and cheese crowd, then Will might come. So she's going to expedite that process and buy some for you. I know John from Tampa and Paul from Gainesville, listeners of the show, will be there. It'd only be right if Will from Tampa also made an appearance.
Hey, I kind of like this. Go ahead.
Bring a chandelier and we'll put wine and cheese underneath it to see if Will shows up to one of the tailgates.
I kind of like this bit going on where you guys just keep inviting me everywhere. And it just, I'm like Lane Kiffin. You don't know if I'm staying or going.
There was a chandelier at the tailgate last week.
Oh, every tailgate had a chandelier, Sam.
Yeah, I thought Will stayed home.
I don't know if this turned into the Roast Will show. But I'm happy to that's my cross to bear. I'll bear it, you know.
Well, we hope to see everyone there come Saturday.
And Sam, there's been a rumor that you might be putting boots on the ground in the state of Florida at some point over the next couple of weeks. Is that true?
I actually will be in the state of Florida this weekend celebrating a good buddy of mine's wedding. Shout out Alex. Unfortunately, just going to be kind of in the southern part, the SoFlo area. So don't really think I'll have the means necessary to shoot on up to Gainesville. But will be nice to get a little Florida soil under my feet and smell some salt water.
Well, you know, you've had Thanksgiving at my house before and attended Florida State. So just make that drive on north. And I've actually got a ticket for you for Florida State. So come on. You can fly out of Jacksonville right back to Arizona come Sunday. So
light bulb just went off.
Piece it together. Well, all right, everybody. Thanks for listening again. We're brought to you by Norris and Norris PA out of Lake City, Florida, a preeminent law firm. My guy boy. Give him a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. And as always, we're part of the Stadium Miguel Network. And thank you guys for listening again. Go Gators.
Go Gators. Go Gators.